Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. Today's guest, Los Angeles Times investigative reporter Suzanne Rust and her team, recently went on a trip to Ecuador's Galapagos Islands, one of the richest marine ecosystems in the world. They were the only visitors touring the park by boat. They saw penguins swimming alongside tropical fish and sea turtles and hammerhead sharks meandering through the darker, deeper waters. Environmentalists and locals say the splendor of the past has returned because COVID has halted international tourism. But without tourism, the locals suffer and the park suffers. Without visitors and local fishing crews patrolling the waters, poachers are able to scoop up fish without being detected. Suzanne Rust and her team report that earlier this summer, more than 300 Chinese fishing vessels, many designed to hold 1,000 tons of catch, waited at the Marine Preserve's border, ready to snatch up sea life as it migrated south toward the waters off Peru and Chile. Joining us to talk about how locals are responding and what this means for the future of the Galapagos Islands is Suzanne Rust, an investigative reporter at the Los Angeles Times, where she specializes in environmental issues. Hi, Suzanne. Suzanne, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good morning. Nice to be here.
Well, it's great to have you back, Suzanne. And you and your team are so lucky to have had this experience. How were you able to plan a trip to go to these islands?
Yeah, really. It was really fortunate and it was completely serendipitous. So we were in touch with actually a local, a woman named Mary Crowley. She lives in Tiburon, and she runs something called the Ocean Voyages Institute, and they're really interested in removing plastics from the oceans. The photographer I work with, Carolyn Cole, had been in touch with Mary and her group for a while, and we were notified, must be about 3.5 weeks ago now, that they were going to be in the Galapagos, and they were looking at these Chinese fishing vessels, which had been reported in the news, and we're working with the Ecuadorian Navy to monitor. So we were invited down to come and see what the Navy was doing with the Chinese fishing fleet that was off the perimeter of the park. So that's how we got there.
The Galapagos Islands are a very remote area, about 900 kilometers off the coast of Ecuador. How do you actually travel to the islands?
So if you were to go there on vacation, the way you do it is you fly into Ecuador, you'd fly into one of two cities, either Quito or Guayaquil, which is right on the port. And then from there, you fly to the islands. That's how most people get there. And there are two major airports that take commercial airlines, and then a third smaller one.
How busy... I know that Ecuador does actually a really good job of limiting the number of travelers who can go to the Galapagos Islands because they want to maintain just the beauty of the place. How many tourists usually before COVID were able to go to the islands?
So I think the daily tally was in the hundreds, if not low thousands. That's how many would come in every day. And they are really strict. I'd been there years ago. And so they do limit the number of people that can arrive every day. They limit the number of people that are allowed on boats, the number of boats that are out, and the number of people who can go on an island every day and the amount of time they spend. But yeah, it's usually, I mean, there are probably, you know, somewhere around the 1,000 number that come in every day, if not more.
And now it's down to almost zero?
It's very low. Right now, I think, as I mentioned in the article, Carolyn Cole and I hopped on a flight from Guayaquil to the islands. We were 2 of 9 people on this flight. We were the only international tourists. The one wonderful sort of part about all of this is because they have been so hard hit by international tourism, tourists not coming in, they've opened it up to domestic tourism. So, there are many Ecuadorians who are now able to visit because prices have been so reduced. They can go visit the islands. But for the most part, they just fly to the island Santa Cruz and do day trips from there. We were the only ones doing sort of the boat tours that are what most international tourists do when they go.
What was it like for you to be one of the only people in this beautiful area? I mean, that what you write about is amazing. Penguins swimming alongside tropical fish. You write about hammerhead sharks, pods of dolphins and whales. They usually stay out of the busy harbor when there are lots of tourists there. But as you write, with the tourist boats out of commission, they are swimming around the area for the first time in decades. I mean, what an amazing experience that must have been for you.
Oh, I mean, it was. And again, any time you go to the Galapagos, as I said, I'd been there a few years ago. I mean, you see wildlife. It is really an incredible place. But this experience, I mean, I only had the one data point to compare it to. It blew me away. There were animals everywhere. You know, you read about the animals you will see there, the land tortoises, the marine iguanas, and you see those all the time. But the rarer ones, too, like the hammerhead sharks, I mean, we would go diving, and every time we dove, we came out of the water, like looking at one another going, that's the best scuba dive I've ever taken in my life. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable. And talking to people who have lived there for decades, they just say it's like it was in the 1960s and 70s and before, that again, these animals are coming into this busy bay, that birds are nesting in the trees above the cliffs of Academy Bay. It really is amazing, but it's something, you know, we're seeing everywhere. As at the beginning of the pandemic, as people sort of disappeared, animals seem to be filling in the void, and that's still happening there right now.
It sounds incredible. Do you know, Suzanne, why has the Ecuadorian government been so successful in protecting this place compared to so many governments around the world that have really failed?
Well, they've really made an investment in the Galapagos. I mean, when I talk to politicians, Ecuador, like many places, is split up into different, they call them cantons, but sort of like provinces. And the Galapagos province is always the most lucrative. When there are recessions or depressions around the country, the Galapagos stays wealthy. It always keeps money coming in. And that's been because of the tourists, and it's been because they have managed it so well. They realize that the management of the park is so critical for bringing international tourists in. So they've taken it very, very, very seriously.
Does that
this
money...
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say this time, however, because of the pandemic, the tourists aren't coming in. And so unlike in the past, the Galapagos is really for the first time ever sort of economically suffering. So go on.
And we'll talk about that in a minute. But pre-COVID, did that money trickle down to the locals?
Oh, yes. So the entire economy, I mean, they say 90%, but everybody I spoke to said, it pretty much is 100%. The locals depend on that economy. You know, the farmers, the fishermen, the shop owners, it all depends on the tourist economy. I mean, the fishermen sell the fish to the restaurants and the boats. Same with farmers. They grow the food for all of that and the shopkeepers. So all of it trickles down to the economy. And in general, the people who live in the Galapagos live quite well because they are insured this sort of steady supply of income from all the tourists that come in.
Do you know how many people live in the Galapagos?
I'd have to go back and look. I think it's in the few thousands. It's not too many. 97% of the islands is park land. There are just a few who live in this one area on Santa Cruz Island, and it's just in the few thousands.
You have a video that goes along with your piece, and a number of locals say that they're just really suffering right now. They're trying to catch whatever they can to ensure to feed their neighbors, and it seems like they're setting up co-ops just to try to take care of each other.
Yeah, that is happening because they can't sell their... So, for instance, we talked to fishermen, we spoke with farmers, we talked to shopkeepers, restaurant owners. Those who are growing and making the food can't sell it anywhere right now. And so they're basically giving it away. Bartering has become fairly normal. So the farmers we spoke to said they're giving food, in exchange for things like fuel, in exchange for, household items. It's sort of the only way they're sort of managing right now. We were not able to get to the churches when we were there, because we were not on land long enough. But apparently, according to the people we spoke with, every day people are going and taking handouts. There's just nobody is making any money.
You report that this has really laid bare the vulnerability of an economic model that is 90% dependent upon tourism dollars. 90%, that is a huge number.
Yeah. And as I said, I mean, everybody we spoke to said 90% is probably on the low end. It's much closer to 100%. And yeah, it has, right? This economy for so long now, you know, for at least a couple of decades, has just relied on this tourism aspect. And you know, through two or three decades, it has served well. As I said before, like recessions for the rest of the country or a depression in the rest of the country didn't affect the Galapagos because tourism kept coming in. That's not the case right now. And for the first time, the entire economy has just sort of, the floor has sort of moved beneath them. It's gone. And it's really frightening for the people who live there.
One of the reasons why, excuse me, there are so many reasons why, but one of the reasons why people are so attracted to the islands is that nearly 80% of the species found there are not found anywhere else on Earth.
It's incredible, right? And this is the place where Charles Darwin went when he was, you know, touring around the world, and he came up with his theory of natural selection. These were the islands that sort of brought that forward. I mean, it's an incredible place. I mean, there are things like iguanas, marine iguanas that swim in the ocean. Iguanas don't do that anywhere else. The land tortoises that we've all heard about. The different finches that are different on island to island that all through natural selection adapted their own ability to find and harvest food. It's an incredible place. I mean, it's funny when we were with a naturalist, and every time we would say something like, what kind of penguin is that? That's a Galapagos penguin. What kind of sea lion is that? It's a Galapagos sea lion. These creatures are endemic to this area, and there's nothing like them anywhere else.
Amazing. Were you able to talk with locals about how tourism has affected the Galapagos Islands over the years? Not in terms of the money they bring, but in terms of how it's affected the ecosystem, if at all.
So yes and no. You know, as many of these things sort of happen, right? This place was just incredible, and so beginning in the 30s and 40s. People from California, yachters around the world, started going down there to see the wildlife. And over that time, it has built and grown. So it's been very, very slow. And I don't think most people realize the pressure that tourism had put on the ecosystem until the pandemic, right? And once the pandemic occurred and all the tourists were gone, suddenly they were able to see in a way that hadn't been so vivid the return of a natural state of wildlife that hadn't been around in decades. So again, the Galapagos has really managed tourism well and conservation, but it's clear now that the number of people who are down there and moving through there every day during normal times has created pressure on the park. It was an inescapable reality once the tourists stopped coming.
Right. Today, we're speaking with Suzanne Rust, an investigative environmental reporter at the Los Angeles Times. Suzanne and her team recently took a trip to Ecuador's Galapagos Islands, one of the richest marine ecosystems in the world. COVID has really laid bare the vulnerability of an economic model that is 90% dependent upon tourism. The islands are also under threat by Chinese fishing fleets, which we will discuss in just a couple of minutes. If you have any questions for Suzanne, if you have been to the Galapagos Islands, or you know anyone who lives in the area and you'd like to comment on the beauty of the place, the importance of this incredible place, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Suzanne, let's talk about what is happening with these fishing fleets. You write that there's an unofficial network of local tour boats and fishing vessels, and they really work to protect the islands by keeping an eye out for those who might harm the marine bounty. but COVID has grounded this fleet, creating an opening for outsiders. Can you tell us more about this unofficial network that really keeps an eye on what's happening?
Oh, yeah. So again, these tour boats that go out, you know, they move around the islands. And just because they're out there, they're a set of eyes that are constantly monitoring the park. There are also the local fishermen who go out within the preserve and are allowed to fish within it, who go out. And they, again, they're sort of their eyeballs on the park all of the time. They're not there right now. And so there is a large concern that there could be boats coming in that are churning off their vessel tracking systems and taking advantage of the fact that there's nobody out there patrolling the park. You know, there is the Ecuadorian Navy. There are the park has enforcement boats out there, but not a lot and not many. And considering the vast expanse of ocean water that is under the purview of the park, it's impossible to think they could keep an eye on everything. And it's not just the water, right? There are also concerns that people could be poaching from the land. I mean, there's just the usual number of boats and people that are out there keeping an eye on things is not there. And so nobody's watching right now.
And what's amazing about the Galapagos Islands is we know this through data. When you don't touch a place, it absolutely flourishes. But that also means that there's so much life there for these vessels, for example, to catch. I mean, there's a lot of, from fish to what you say, land animals. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah. So there definitely has been research that shows these marine preserves all over the world are incredibly effective at not only keeping animals from being hunted, but allowing them to reproduce. And so these marine preserves really work in what they're supposed to do, which is to bring back marine life and let it flourish. Of course, scientists aren't the only ones who know this, nor are tourists, but people who actually harvest that kind of marine life. So around marine preserves, not just the Galapagos, but at the perimeter of these preserves, fishing boats wait because they know this is the place you can come and get great food, right? Mm-hmm. It's a bountiful harvest. So as marine preserves grow, and there are more and more of them, you also see boat fleets increase, right? And they move to the perimeters of these parks because they can get fish right outside of it. So it's a well-documented behavior, and it's being noted. And then this summer, what happened? So around the Galapagos Preserve, Chinese fishing vessels, they have, I think there's 17,000 deep water vessels that are under Chinese purview. They go around the world looking for fish. Over the past several years, several boats, you know, in the dozens, scores, and hundreds, have waited outside of the Galapagos Marine Preserve. This year was exceptional in the number. There were, I think estimates now are about 360 moved in there probably around late July and just sat at the border. So radar and tracking analyses showed these boats just sitting there. They were mostly squid jigging, but there were also reports that other fish were being caught. And in years past, it's been clear that those boats were also targeting migrating species like tuna. So anyway, they were there, and it was really alarming for the Ecuadorian Navy when they saw all of those boats there. But yes, this is it's well documented. Go on.
You write that many of these fishing vessels are designed to hold 1,000 tons of catch.
Yeah. And so, and if you think about that, right, that's such an enormous amount of catch, right, per boat. And then you think there are 360 boats. And talking to the U.S. Coast Guard, who went down there in late August to help the Ecuadorian Navy in terms of observation and surveillance, they said there were also huge processing boats. So the 360 fishing vessels, right, would get their catch and then unload it onto one of these processing boats. And then they'd be free to go out and refill their 1,000. Just think about the enormous amount of sea life that is being harvested. I can't even get my head around it, really.
Yeah, it's so hard to get your head around it. You quote Aniel Yanez Venezuela, the mayor of Santa Cruz Canton, the Galapagos's equivalent of a province. And this mayor said, this is an attack on our resources. They are killing the species we have protected and polluting our biota with the plastic waste they drop overboard. They are raping the Galapagos.
Yeah, he clearly was really upset about this and concerned about it. I mean, again, remember, the people who live in the Galapagos, as we've already spoken or talked about, are their lifeblood comes from providing conservation to the animals in this park because that's their economy. Their economy is that conservation and international tourists who come in to see these animals. If those animals are threatened, if they are taken, then what they are there for totally disappears. I mean, it is really personal and concerning to the people who live there. And the show of boats that were around the preserve this summer was horrifying for the people who lived there, right? They have spent all of this time managing and conserving these animals. They have seen what has happened as a result of that, which is the incredible number of animals that have been conserved. The thought of them leaving the preserve, because, right, animals don't know about these boundaries, and then getting sucked up into fishing vessels is just truly horrifying for the people who live there.
Do you know who runs or who owns these Chinese fishing vessels?
I'm not as clear on that. There are several companies that do own them. There are Chinese. I also understand that they are subsidized by the Chinese government. And it's a real concern. And again, as I said, there were just 360 of these vessels around the Galapagos this summer, but there are 17,000 of these deep water fishing vessels that are subsidized by the Chinese government around the world. So let's think about that.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
It's incredible. Let's take a caller before we go to break. Let's hear from Kevin in San Francisco. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Conversation makes me realize how pleased I am, having done a cruise from Chicago to Galapagos Islands back in 1991 for Christmas and New Year's. I've been wanting to do a wildlife tour of, see African wildlife. And we hear from Attenborough and others how much of their species have become extinct. But I went in 1991, almost 40 years ago, and literally, it was my first time snorkeling. It was like an underwater Garden of Eden. I had never seen so much marine life in my life, and it spurred me to continue doing snorkeling over the years. But I've just never seen so many. And the sea lions would swim right up to you. It was like playing a game with the tourists. And she's right about just the wealth of marine life. So I don't know what it's like now, 40 years later. But if it's anything like the wildlife in Africa, it's probably diminished greatly.
Well, thank you. Lucky for you to go to the Galapagos in 1991. It sounds like it is still gorgeous because of the protection, Suzanne.
Yeah, I think probably what I saw this last time I was there was like what Kevin saw in 1990 and 91. It was... clearly, the protections have helped these animals to flourish. But as we already talked about as well, because nobody's out there right now, just the bounty was unbelievable. And it's true, the sea lions were, they were so much fun. We would go down and they would just come up and swim near us and check us out and dart at us and dart away. It was really an incredible experience.
Amazing. Well, thank you for the call, Kevin. We're going to take a quick break. Today, we are speaking with Los Angeles Times investigative environmental reporter Suzanne Rust about her reporting from Ecuador's Galapagos Islands. You can find her pieces at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, it is our One Planet series. Every Monday, we talk about the climate crisis and a number of issues related to the environment. And today, we're joined by Suzanne Rust, investigative environmental reporter with the Los Angeles Times. Suzanne and her team were able to travel to Ecuador's Galapagos Islands, one of the richest marine ecosystems in the world. The islands are under threat by Chinese fishing fleets, as you've been hearing. And if you have any questions or comments for Suzanne about what she saw there, and just overall the issue around these fishing fleets just grabbing so much underwater life, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We have an email from a listener who says, Sea of Shadows is a documentary about cartels decimating sea life in the Sea of Cortez, funded by the Chinese. The people involved with the film are doing amazing work that we should all be supporting and we should all know about. They risk their lives for the health of the ocean. We actually did a show with the people who do that amazing work. We did a show about the Sea of Shadows, and it really is an incredible documentary. Suzanne, do you know if any of these really amazing international environmental groups are working on this issue to try to raise awareness about this and stop these fleets?
Oh, absolutely. There really is a movement behind this. And these groups, I would also recommend, if you haven't read it, Ian Urbina's book about deep sea issues, ocean issues, The Outlaw Ocean. There really is a growing awareness, not only about these, the Chinese deep sea fishing fleet, but also sort of more broadly, just the overfishing that is occurring out there. I mean, it's not just a concern about conservation. It's a concern about, you know, the protein that's available for all of us out there, and if it's all taken and our oceans are depleted, it's a crisis. So they are working, and it's part of the reason you're seeing marine preserves popping up all over the world right now. I think Peru just announced that they were expanding their protected zone off their off their country as well. And the Galapagos or Ecuador is now considering expanding the protected zone off its mainland so that it meets the protected zone at the Galapagos. So right now there's sort of a channel where boats can go between the protected zone off of the Ecuadorian mainland and between it and the Galapagos. And so sort of sealing that off to protect that area as well. But yeah, they're doing great work and it's catching on.
Yeah, we've done so many shows about the great work of Sea Shepherd. They're doing amazing work around the globe. And then you report that in August, hundreds of locals took to the streets to protest this fishing fleet, worried that it was depleting the park's natural resources and possibly giving another reason for tourists not to return in the future.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's happening elsewhere as well. I mean, as people see these fleets come off the shores of their country, right, where they get fish, where they depend on the fish life that is off their own coast, to see an international fleet show up and fish just off that boundary is alarming and upsetting for a lot of people, and for good reason. And just as an aside, it's something that the U.S. Coast Guard and the U.S. Navy are now actively participating in as well. There is a lot of concern by the Coast Guard about overfishing around the world. And so they are actually increasing their fleet number to be able to help countries patrol and surveil the fishing that is happening. And part of the reason is many times these deep sea fishing fleets are also sort of tied up in a sort of darker business. They're often associated, and I'm not saying these Chinese fishing boats are, but there is a large concern that these things go hand in hand. You have illegal fisheries, you also have things like illegal drug movement or human trafficking.
Right.
So it's a real concern.
Along with all of this comes plastic. You took a walk around the rocky edge of the island, and you were with Fernando Ortiz, a park guide and former director of the region's chapter of Conservation International. And there were scores of plastic bottles, shoes, and equipment packaging, and they were labeled with Chinese characters. And he said, these are from those boats. He noticed the newness of the items because the labels were not faded by the sun or the sea.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, think about 360 vessels, right, that can carry 1,000 tons of harvest. I mean, these are enormous boats. So you think about the crew that's on them, and they just, you know, whether they mean to or not, I suppose they don't really think about it, but chuck plastic off the side, or the bottles, water bottles blow off, or juice bottles, plastic bottles blow off, whatever. All that garbage just goes right into the water. And then the prevailing winds and currents bring them right into the Galapagos. Mm-hmm. And again, what usually happens during ordinary times, number one, you don't have that same number of boats on the perimeter, but you also have these tourist boats going around. And when people go onto the islands and do the, you know, the prescribed hikes they can do, they're also there to pick up plastic. And nobody's out there right now doing that. So the islands are getting covered. I spoke with the U.S. ambassador when I was down there to Ecuador, and he said just 2 weeks before I had been down there, he had gone out to Galapagos and done a voluntary beach combing mission where he went and picked up plastic, and he couldn't believe how much plastic he picked up.
Hmm. We have an email from Greg who says, how much is 1,000 tons? The only way I can understand how much that is, I need it in relative terms. Can you estimate the total tonnage of harvestable fish in the Galapagos Marine Reserve?
Oh, God, no. You'd have to give me like 10 minutes to try to figure that out. I wish I could make that relatable to you. Just sort of imagine that it's mind-blowing. I mean, one thing I can tell you, and this didn't have to do with the Chinese fishing fleets, but Carolyn Cole, the photographer I went down with, she and I went to some of the fishing markets in Guayaquil. I can't really sort of tell you in tonnage what we were seeing, but just the local fishing fleet was bringing, you know, I'm talking hundreds of boats were coming in. There was more sea life than I could possibly explain. I mean, trying to think here, like the size of a building, think about something like the size of 10 two-car garages, right, as a roof. And just everywhere in there were boxes and boxes of fish and crabs and squid, just Wow. This unbelievable amount of sea life. And that's just from the local fishing crews off the coast of Ecuador. That doesn't even, I suspect, pale in comparison to what's being put onto those ships out there. Mm. That was probably a fraction. And again, that's not helpful, but...
No, I mean, it's so hard to know, really. Yeah, today, we're speaking with Suzanne Rust, an investigative environmental reporter with the Los Angeles Times. And I hope you can take the time to read the incredible pieces that she wrote about what is happening on the Galapagos Islands off the coast of Ecuador. Now, I would like to welcome Dr. Marla Valentin to the show. Dr. Valentin is an illegal fishing and transparency analyst at Oceana. Hi, Marla. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you are all doing really incredible work looking at these fishing vessels. And in late September, Oceana released a new analysis that finds 300 Chinese vessels pillaging the waters off of the Galapagos Marine Reserve, primarily for squid. Can you talk about how you all conduct these studies?
Yeah, absolutely. We use a publicly available mapping tool called Global Fishing Watch, which was developed by Oceana, Google, and SkyTruth. And it visualizes where vessels stop to fish using a tool called Automatic Identification Systems. These are transponders on commercial vessels that were originally used on ships to avoid collisions. And they transmit a vessel's identity, speed, and location to satellite and terrestrial receivers. And so from there, we're able to analyze whether a vessel is fishing or not.
That is so interesting. How new is this technology?
Global Fishing Watch is a few years old, founded in 2015, and we can look at data going back all the way to 2012 in near real time. So we can do historical studies of fishing behavior, as well as up-to-date analysis of the world's fishing fleets.
So you were able to find that from July 13th to August 13th, 99% of the visible fishing activity off of the Galapagos Islands was by Chinese flagged vessels.
Yes, that's correct. So using that Global Fishing Watch data, we saw that these fleets were primarily targeting squid, and they conducted more than 73,000 hours of fishing off of the Galapagos Islands. Mm. Which is just a massive amount of fishing. To put that in perspective, in the 7 months of 2020, Taiwan conducted 69,000 hours of squid fishing for the entire year. So in just 1 month, this fleet in this one particular area outstrips the rest of the world's squid fishing.
Incredible. Are you able to track, once the boats are full of catch, where they go?
Yes, we can follow these vessels, as long as their AIS is on, to the ports where they offload their fish. We can also track when these fishing boats meet up with cargo ships. We call these reefers. They're refrigerated ships. And oftentimes, these vessels will offload their catch onto these ships, change crews, refuel, and then continue fishing for months and months at a time without coming into port.
So where is most of the squid sold? Where does it end up?
Well, a lot of this goes back into the market in China. There is increasing demand for fishes and squids to feed populations around the world. It's estimated that by 2025, that the squid industry is going to be worth over $11
billion. $11 billion. You also documented Chinese vessels disabling their public tracking devices. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. So we consider a vessel to have gone dark once their transponders have been off for more than 24 hours. We want to rule out any poor satellite coverage, any variability. And so when these vessels go dark, they've turned off that tracking device, but it's not mandatory to be used in the high seas. So these vessels don't need a legitimate reason to disable their trackers. But when they do so in a certain way, it raises alarms. For example, one of the vessels that went dark for 17 days. And then as soon as it turned its transponder back on, it had an encounter with a reefer, one of those refrigerated cargo ships that lasted for several hours. The question is, what happened? Where did they fish in those 17 days before they had to offload their catch because their holds were so full?
Mm-hmm. Suzanne, what are the laws around this?
It's completely legal for the, and you can jump in if I'm not being completely clear here, but it is legal for these Chinese fishing fleets, as long as they are outside the exclusive economic zone, to target a species like squid and fish as much as they like. So that's why when the U.S. Coast Guard went down to help the Ecuadorian Navy observe and surveil these boats, they saw no reason to board the ship under any of the international agreements that are out there that would do things like protect migrating fish in that region. So right now it's legal.
Marla, what would you add?
Yes, I would add that for squid, the fishing that they're doing is completely legal. There are other multinational governing bodies, such as regional fisheries management organizations, that exist to protect highly migratory species such as tunas, but there's nothing to protect other species of marine life when they're in the high seas and areas beyond a nation's jurisdiction. So there's nothing to regulate the amount of fish or the type of fishing that the Chinese distant water fleet is currently conducting.
What about bycatch? Is there any way to know? I mean, if you're catching 1,000 tons of squid, how many other fish and other marine life is caught up in that?
Well, it's really hard to know, and it's particularly concerning in this area where there are rare and endangered marine mammals. There are threatened tunas and sharks and billfishes that are there. And it's not just the bycatch that is concerning. Those same animals also rely on squid for a significant portion of their diet. So we are potentially, or the fleet is potentially removing a major food source from the ecosystem.
That's a really good point. Suzanne, this really does affect the food chain, the underwater food chain.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, squid are vital in the food chain. And if you remove everything in that region, then the other creatures that rely on them for food don't have them to eat. And then you sort of extend that beyond, right? I mean, we were just talking about the amount of protein that squid provide humans, right? In terms of food, you take out the squid, you take out the things that rely on them. I mean, we're really talking about a problem in the oceans, not just for the food chain of the oceans, but for humans as well that rely on them.
Right. So, Suzanne, have you been able to interview any Chinese officials connected to these vessels about all of the fish that they are catching? As you note in your report, for its part, China says it has a zero tolerance toward illegal fishing.
Yes, I tried reaching the Chinese embassy both in Peru and Ecuador when I was in South America. It was they never got back to me. They did release statements during that period of time suggesting that the concern from the Ecuadorian and Peruvian navies were overwrought and that they weren't doing anything illegal and that nobody had anything to fear from what they were doing. So they were saying what they were doing was completely legal and they were not overfishing anything. Where they stand. Yep.
You report that in 2017, a Chinese fishing vessel intercepted off of the Galapagos was found to be hauling 300 tons of fish, which included tens of thousands of illegally caught sharks.
Yes. So they have been clearly bad actors in the past, right? As we were all just discussing, the squid fishery, it is legal right now. What they're doing. But I think there is so much suspicion and concern because they've been bad actors in the past. They have targeted animals such as shark. There was a story in The Guardian this summer about a researcher who was following a whale shark in the Galapagos, and whale sharks move very, very slowly. They had a radio tag on it. Suddenly the whale shark speed increased to I think like 10 to 12 knots, which happens to be the same speed that fishing boats go on. And for several days it was going that fast and then it just disappeared. So there is concern that bycatch, as we were just discussing, is also being ensnared with the squid. Again, there's also concern that, you know, when vessels turn off their tracking devices, and with a history of bad behavior, that other things could be happening. But again, the U.S. Coast Guard went out this time and did not see anything blatantly illegal happening in front of them. So it's hard to know.
Marla, as Oceana points out, China is the world's largest fishing nation by far. We talked about their fleet estimated at up to 17,000 vessels compared to about 250 to 300 vessels for the EU and the United States. Oceana says that China is ranked the worst nation in the world by the IUU Fishing Index when it comes to illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. And its fleet has been routinely implicated in violations, including the one we just spoke about. So how do you get a handle on this?
Well, it's for us looking at the numbers. And what we do know is that thus far in 2020, their squid fleet, which only makes up a small portion of those 17,000 vessels, have already conducted over 500,000 hours of squid fishing. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard to get an accurate estimate of the true impact that these vessels are having because there is very little data on global squid populations, their migrations, their reproductions, the current state of the squid stock. And so it's so hard to know what cascading implications this quantity of fishing is going to have for our world's fisheries.
And as you say, the governments of the world must work together to ensure that seafood is safe, legally caught, responsibly sourced, honestly labeled. But it's difficult to do that when you have these, you know, 17,000 vessels that are able to catch so much fish, and in some cases, disabling their public tracking devices.
It's very hard to know. Just this year, though, China has updated its distant water fishing management regulations and has created their own version of a censure list to sanction individual Chinese fishing vessels who are committing serious violations. So that's something we are going to continue monitoring throughout the year to see if there are any changes going forward to how these distant water fleets are operating, to see if they're abiding by these new rules.
We have an email from Carolyn who says, consumers can look at where their seafood comes from. We enjoy, quote, cheap frozen seafood from Costco and Trader Joe's. Does anyone know where this comes from? And then Sharon says, tiny lettering indicates the country of origin on frozen fish packages. A lot are from the countries mentioned. Be your own protest and avoid these. What tips would you add to this, Marla, and if people want to try to avoid this seafood?
It's so important to know where the fish are caught more than anything else, because many of the fish, even fish caught in the U.S. waters, are often sent to other nations such as China to be processed before being re-imported to the U.S. So it's so hard to know where your fish is coming from. So I can encourage consumers out there to shop locally and support their local fishermen. I personally am a big fan of Gulf shrimp. But they can also look for other labels on the seafood that they're purchasing. For example, the Marine Stewardship Council, the MSC, will put a logo on some of the fish or seafood items that are being sold to identify the fish have been tracked throughout the supply chain and so that it's from a sustainable fishery.
And Suzanne, we have a comment from Greg who says, thank you for the show. More bad news that I have no idea how to solve given the growing appetites of 8 billion humans, but it's important to know.
Yeah, it is important to know. And I also think, you know, one of the things we didn't discuss, but which you sort of mentioned in your promo, you know, halfway through the hour, there's also this thing, climate change, right? Which is, you know, we're talking about the direct effect of fishing, but we've also got this pressure on fish and marine systems as the world changes. So I really think, you know, we all need to be aware of exactly what's happening out there and concerned.
Very concerned. I mean, especially for the communities whose livelihood depends on a healthy ecosystem. I mean, so many of us can live our lives without eating fish, frankly. I mean, that's what a lot of these environmentalists are saying now. But people whose livelihood depends on this, they can't. So, Suzanne, is there any way for people to directly support the fishermen and fisherwomen of the Galapagos?
Definitely. I mean, look, you know, go to the, you can certainly provide donations to the Galapagos National Park. And that money conserves, again, and helps them enforce conservation measures in the area, which helps the fishing community of the Galapagos. You know, one of the things that I had talked to with business owners and tour guides down in the Galapagos is how they can move into the future in a way that doesn't put as much pressure on the system as, you know, the pre-pandemic model of tourism. And one of those is people should go take, if they can, longer vacations down there, spend 3 to 4 weeks, not like 4 or 5 days. More people do that. That reduces the number of people who have to go there. So book a 1 month vacation in the Galapagos. I mean, what you'll be hitting down there are the fresh fish that the local fishermen have caught, and providing support so that they can continue conserving and preserving this area.
Incredible. Suzanne, final thoughts on what you heard from locals about what they hope will change or what they hope to see once we're able to travel again?
Yeah, I mean, I think this pandemic has really laid bare the concern about having an economy that is so reliant on an influx of people coming in every day and putting pressure on the park. And so they're really trying to think, how can we move forward into a different kind of tourism model that still relies on, you know, people coming, the ecotourism part of it, but doesn't put as much pressure on, and that maybe longer stays for people. They're getting broadband out there. It could be that people go down and live there for, you know, 6 months, so that the reliance on tourists coming in and out isn't so burdensome on the system. And of course, everybody is aware, as we just spoke about briefly, that climate change is this thing. It's a threat to every place, including the Galapagos. And as that pressure increases on the park as well, it's going to be critical that these other pressures are somewhat relieved.
Suzanne Rust is an investigative environmental reporter with the Los Angeles Times. Suzanne, thank you so much for joining us again, and thank you for your great reporting.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And final thoughts from you, Marla. Given the incredible work that you all do, what else, what other steps can people take, you know, people who care about this issue and don't want to see this continue?
So I'll close by saying consumers deserve seafood that is safe, legally caught, responsibly sourced, and honestly labeled. And transparency throughout the supply chain of fisheries is the catalyst that's going to reform policies in the U.S. and abroad that will ensure that that happens. I encourage your listeners to go to Oceana's website and become wave makers with us, where we send out newsletters and information that can help consumers make the best choices and also learn more about how they can protect marine ecosystems.
Dr. Marla Valentin is a legal fishing and transparency analyst at Oceana. Marla, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you. And we will definitely continue to do shows around these important issues. And I hope you can take time to read Suzanne's piece about what is happening in the Galapagos Islands at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for keeping our studio running. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.